Srimad Bhagavatam, the Amala Purana, the manifestation of Krishna in this world after his disappearance. Krishna is very expert. He can disappear in one form and reappear in another form. The sages of Naimisharanya, when they questioned Suta Goswami several topics, one of their topics, six questions found in the first chapter of First Canto, one of those questions was, now that Krishna has gone, where are religious principles taking shelter? Because when Krishna was present, he being the personification of religion, by being the personality of Godhead, from the personality of Godhead, all principles of religion come. Dharmam hi sakshat bhagavat pranitam. So when Krishna was just walking on the surface of the earth, just touching his lotus feet upon the earth, everything auspicious was present. All protection of religious principles was present. All bounty, all good fortune was present just by his being here. Now he's gone. Where will religious principles now be found, now that he's gone? Kali Yuga has begun. And the response given by Suta Goswami is, just like when the sun sets on the western horizon, shortly after, the moon may rise on the eastern horizon. And through the moon, one can also get light. And in this case, the moon-like Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun. Not only is it as brilliant as the sun, but unlike the sun's rays, which are very scorching at times, the moon rays are very cool and soothing. As brilliant as the sun, but soothing. So Krishna has made his appearance in that way, just after his departure from this world. Just after the setting of the sun on the western horizon, the full moon of this Bhagavad Purana, as brilliant as the sun, has appeared. That's the description found in Bhagavad Purana and in Padma Purana. It specifically describes the Bhagavad Purana as the literary incarnation of the Lord. Vyasa is the incarnation that wrote or compiled the Vedas, including the Bhagavatam. But the Bhagavatam itself is the personification of, in literary form, the personification of the Lord in this age of Kali. So it's most wonderful. Krishna appears in Dwarapa Yuga and the Bhagavatam appears in Kali Yuga to give light in this dark age. But those who take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam are taking shelter of Krishna in his literary feature. And so accessible. Just stretch your arm a little bit and pull that little book off your shelf and there you go. There's Krishna's in your hand. So approachable. With the deity form, there's so many requirements. And the literary form, so accessible, like with his name. Of course, similar respect must be shown, otherwise our consciousness will be dull and not able to properly receive the message of the Bhagavatam, but in that receptive mood, then the perfection of life can be achieved. I'm reading sequentially from the second canto. According to Padma Purana, the first two cantos show the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. They are the manifestation of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Meaning, if you approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, you've reached the Supreme Lord. And to approach the lotus feet of anyone, including the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it means one's mood must be very humble before the Lord. Because otherwise you'll not see his feet, you'll see something else. So the message of the first two cantos helps us to become situated in the proper mood of service to the Personality of Godhead. And along with the message of mood is the message of purity, pure devotional service. So I'm going to continue where I left off in this sequence of second canto descriptions. I'm somewhere in the middle of chapter 4. Chapters 1, 2, and 3 are an answer to the first questions asked by Maharaj Parikshit of Shukadeva Goswami. They met for the first time at the end of chapter 19 of Canto 1, where Maharaj Parikshit has been cursed. He's given up his kingdom. He sat down on the bank of the Ganges. The sages have come from all over to participate with him in this glorious event of his giving up his body in full pure consciousness. And into the assembly comes none other than the son of Vyasadeva, 16-year-old Shukadeva Goswami. And all the elder sages and rishis and yogis and elevated personalities, they've never seen him before either, but just to be in his presence, they're feeling his awesome superiority of spiritual realization. They all stood in honor to receive Shukadeva Goswami. And some exchange between Shukadeva and Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit prostrates himself before, he is the emperor of the world, prostrating himself before a 16-year-old boy. Meaning age and those kinds of considerations have no relevance with spiritual realization. And he appreciated profusely the kindness, the mercy, the qualifications of Shukadeva, and then presented his prashna, his inquiries, as questions were two. What's the duty of a person in general, and particularly the duty of one who's about to die like me? But even people in general, they're also about to die. Today or tomorrow or the next day, we're all to die. What is it while we're alive? What is our duty? How to prepare ourselves for that inevitability? What are we to do now? Everyone's doing something now to prepare for the future. How many years of education are young people undergoing so they can, in their adult life, take care of their responsibilities of life? So much preparation for the future. And then while working, preparation for the future. Some plan so that you can be taken care of when you're old. Some plan for the future. And then what about the next phase, when you're old and facing inevitable death? But that's also inevitable as soon as there's birth, according to Bhagavad Gita. Whoever is born, death is certain. Whoever dies, again, birth is certain. Are we making any arrangements? So much time and energy is spent to prepare for the future. So thoughtful persons are preparing now for this mission of human life. So Shukadeva Goswami is being asked to explain, what is our duty given this human form of life? What are we to do with it? And the second question is, what is that subject matter that should be heard, chanted, and remembered regularly and always? So in three chapters, Shukadeva Goswami answers those questions in a sequence. First, form a God conception and be detached from this world. Just quickly. So many other things. But second, just from that God conception, focus your attention upon the Lord of the heart and be detached from all temporal, worldly things. And in that state of concentrated consciousness, actually, one should hear, chant, and remember about the personality of Godhead, and for that matter, just serve Him. For that matter, the other processes described can be left aside. They're preliminary. Just engage in pure devotional service with no other shelter. Then he goes through some idea of worship that's with misconception of worshiping different devas to get some temporary something. But actually all one needs to do is worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and everything is taken care of, temporal and transcendental. Just worship the Personality of Godhead exclusively. And says, so I've answered your question. Like, the Bhagavatam is over. See you guys later. But not like that. The sages of Naimisharanya, hearing that Maharaj Pariksit has now gotten an answer, they launch into this glorification of Maharaj Pariksit and glorification of Shukadeva Goswami in detail. What's the qualification? The message is, what's the qualification to receive the message of Srimad Bhagavatam? What's the qualification to be able to properly deliver the Srimad Bhagavatam? Very important. It's a refrain. What qualification does one have to advance in spiritual life, either on the hearing end or the speaking end? What qualifications? What qualities, what character must one have? And they conclude, Maharaj Pariksit is the best. Shukadeva Goswami is the best. Surely, O Sutta Goswami, there were more topics that were discussed. Please tell. We're very eager. We're enthusiastic. That's another qualification for hearing. We're enthusiastic. Please describe these wonderful topics. So the fourth chapter, which is what we're reading from, begins. with Sutta saying, oh, your questions are so wonderful. Qualifications of the hearer is the having questions that relate to the absolute truth, having questions that relate to the welfare of all living beings, having questions that serve to elevate the consciousness of the soul. Oh sages, your questions are wonderful. I'm very enthusiastic to give you a response. Here's what happened. And some verses again, glorifying the qualifications of Maharaj Pariksit. And then Maharaj Pariksit, by way of appreciating Shukadeva Goswami, opens his heart to Shukadeva Goswami to receive that which Shukadeva Goswami has to offer. And says, since you have indicated that hearing Krishna Katha is that subject matter which one should hear, then Krishna, one order of Krishna Katha, please. A big one. Please describe topics of Krishna. And in relation to Krishna, I would like to know how the Lord performs this act of creation. I've understood from you already, He's the source of everything. He's the cause of all causes. From Him, everything comes into being. So that's clear. But how does He do it? Acharya's comment, he didn't ask, can you describe Rasa Leela? Can you describe his intimate exchanges with the intimate devotees in Braja? That's not where his attention went. Although, he's the king. And he's, you know, he's entitled to all, he's knowledgeable in these subject matters. He already knows. One of the foolish positions or naive positions or mistaken positions that persons sometimes take is, oh, I've already heard that. Let's go on to more. Let's go to more confidential topics. But in order to understand Krishna as he's performing his activities in the spiritual atmosphere, one will not understand that properly if one doesn't understand his the material energy, relationship of the material energy to Krishna. One will see that which is transcendental to be mundane, and we'll measure with yardsticks of mundane reason and logic. It's inevitable. It's just part of our conditioning, and therefore, to go into understanding Krishna's form, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's pastimes, one must understand these topics of the material energy properly, not just understand them, but be really, you know, be very clear, be connected to the personality of Godhead, even while in this material atmosphere. Maharaj Parikshit knew that, even though he already knew the subject matter. So he says to Shukadeva Goswami, you can describe these perfectly because you're a perfectly learned personality. You've learned everything from Vyas, and Vyas knows everything. And you learned everything from him. So, you're perfectly learned in all of the Vedas, but not only you're perfectly learned in the Vedas, you've realized everything. So you can present realized knowledge, and it's not only realized knowledge, but you live by it. You're a pure devotee of the Lord. You're immersed in this subject matter by dint of your pure devotion. And not only you're a pure devotee, but the personality of God, it has lifted you up to position practically equal to Him. Because of your pure devotion, when Krishna sees the pure devotion in the heart of His devotee, He elevates them. There's verses in the scripture that describe like this. Krishna personally describes to Uddhava in Uddhava Gita that one who takes shelter of me and undergoes the process of connecting with me by initiation and submits unto me, I consider that person to be as equal to me because he elevates. This is Krishna's reciprocation with those who are surrendered. So Shukadeva Goswami, although I already know the subject matter, please describe. You can do it, Shukadeva. So So very instructive how to make proper inquiry. Now comes, we've heard many times Shukadeva's qualifications. Vyasadeva now takes us inside the heart of Shukadeva. How does he respond to this question? He doesn't speak right away. He's got all the equipment. He's got all the info. He's got all the processors and all the buttons to push. He can do it. But the qualification is not just he has information and he can deliver information. He concentrates his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead with total absorption. And then he offers a prayer to the Personality of Godhead. Please give me the capacity to respond to this question of Maharaj Parikshit in such a way that Maharaj Parikshit will be able to understand and realize this message. In essence, I am not independent of you. I am affirming my full dependence upon you. Now we can get in that mood when we're in a pinch. You know, so there's a difficult situation and we're feeling, oh my God. And so we're dependent. But what about when there's no difficulty, no obstacle, or no apparent, like, looming, terrible thing? That's the real test of devotion that Shukadeva Goswami exhibits. He's fully in sync with, fully dependent upon, calling in the mood of that dependence upon the Personality of Godhead. And just see the character of Shukadeva Goswami, just like Srimati Radharani. When she starts thinking of Krishna, which is always, she can't stop thinking of Krishna. She's addicted to Krishna. In so many different moods, whether it's, I have to go away from Krishna, I have to go to Krishna, she's helpless. She's absorbed in intense love for Krishna. It's a sublime position. Because Krishna is the source of all rasa, and Srimati Radharani is absorbed in Krishna. But so is Shukadeva Goswami. As from concentrating his mind upon Krishna, he just goes off into this absorption and glorification and offering prayers to Krishna, verse after verse after verse. It's completely spontaneous. And he's perfectly knowledgeable and perfectly realized and purely devoted, so his messages are like nectar. So offering that prayer, he then goes to requesting Krishna to accept his obeisances on so many accounts. Because Krishna, you are this and you are that and you are that and you are this and you are the other thing. Therefore, please accept my obeisances. Please engage me always in your service. He says so many wonderful things in glorification of Krishna. Some of those things that he says include, you are the absolute truth. From you everything comes, and therefore you are the complete whole. And as the complete whole, you manifest yourself within every part. And this is by your inconceivable potency. So, here we are in Ypsilanti, and it's like saying, you know, we're in one home in Ypsilanti, Michigan. And by some miracle, we get the whole of Ypsilanti to come and be in the living room here. How can you do that? You know, the whole fully enters within a tiny part. And you can find the whole within the tiny part, in its fullness. That's contradictory. It's not going to happen. But for Krishna, he does it all the time. All the time. By his inconceivable potency. Therefore, let me offer my humble obeisances unto you. You manifest the spiritual and the material worlds. And because they're from you, to you, you're equal to them. But you make your home in the spiritual realm. And you very kindly manifest your home in the spiritual realm, in this material realm. So that all those who are afflicted by the conditions of material existence are given relief. You do this by your causeless mercy. Therefore, let me offer my humble obeisances unto you. When you do so, when you appear in this world, you purify. You are the supreme abode, the supreme purifier. You give shelter to everyone, even those who are inimical to you. You are equal to all, although it appears that you have your partiality. You are, he expresses it in a very interesting way. You deliver those who are disposed to you in devotion to the topmost position, and you also, those who are inimical towards you, you prevent them from doing that which is going to harm them, thus showing your kindness upon them. You're equally kind upon all, although it appears to be your partiality. Therefore, I offer my humble obeisances unto you. Then he describes that those that are the highest intellectuals in existence exhibit that intellectual zenith by their surrendering unto you. And they, because they know that by surrendering unto you, all of their sinful reactions, all of their material contaminations are quickly eradicated, and very quickly they will come to you. Then he goes the other direction. But those that are engaged in of this world things that are of considered of the highest nature, works of charity, works of sacrifice, selfless performances of beneficial activities for the world, Vedic sacrifices, austerities, amount to nothing if there's no surrender unto you. Therefore, I offer my humble obeisances unto you. Then there's this very famous verse where the indication is that there's no one there's no prior qualification necessary. What you have to be born in a certain family, or have a certain intelligence, or have a certain wealth, or a certain nationality, or a certain caste, or a certain something. No. You are so merciful. It doesn't matter to you. The Kirata Hunandra Palinda Polkasha verse. So the essence of that is, besides a lot of interesting history right in the middle of this glorification of Krishna, Krishna doesn't look at the material assets or debits. Krishna looks at the the sincere desire to come to him. And how does one get that sincere desire to come to him? Sukadeva Goswami indicates, through the association of your very compassionate devotees. Such a cherished commodity in this dark world is the association of devotees, that when we have it, we may take it for granted. When we don't have it, we realize what we're missing. So the verse just prior to what we're going to read this morning is Shukadeva Goswami saying, he is the super soul and the supreme lord of self-realized souls. So he's the super soul of everyone, whoever. So his kindness is there. He accompanies all living entities in their sojourn through material existence. For those who are self-realized, amongst those who have the form of Paramatma within, some are self-realized. For those, he's their supreme master. And so self-realization and realization of God's existence within, or the existence of God. Self-realization and God-realization are simultaneous. You will not find one without the other. So how we regard Krishna is identical with our self-realization. We will come to understand who we are by our relationship, through our relationship with Krishna, through our service and submission to Krishna. The other idea of understanding who we are is just mega illusion. I was having some discussion with somebody the other day. Very sincere expression of, for my whole life I've just abandoned any consideration of who I am because I've been living the expectations of others. Others expect this of me and so I do it. Others expect that of me, so I do it. My whole life has been having no idea who I am, just living out the expectations of others. And I want to discover who I am. Who I am. And my comment was in relation to this. Real self-discovery is when it's completed, don't just fight against that, you know, conditioning influence that has been imposed upon you. Go for the real thing. Don't just go in the other direction, a rebellious spirit, or not necessarily rebellious, but, you know, the self-assertive. Okay, assert yourself. Assert yourself transcendentally. Understand? Explore the self-identity through the relationship with Krishna. Because that's who the self really is. And the ways in which that constitutional position of serving Krishna will come out will be according to your nature, if you're self-realized. But don't line up so many zeros without putting the one in front of it, in other words. You know, this variety of zeros or that variety of zeros, it's still zero. Others' expectations are your own imagination. Who are you really? Who are we, really? We're individuals. That's a good start. And then, what is that individuality? So, Shukadeva Goswami is asserting, for those who are self-realized, you are the Lord and Master. Then he is worshipped by... No, he is the personification of the Vedas, religious scriptures, and austerities. He is worshipped by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and all those who are transcendental to all pretensions. So the focus goes on that phrase, Gata Vyalika. It appears in the previous verse, then again in this verse. So Prabhupada, those of you that are familiar with Prabhupada's writing, know that he will take a phrase and, like a refrain, repeat the phrase, repeat the phrase, repeat the phrase, and massage it like rubbing sandalwood, and its fragrance becomes stronger and stronger and fills the room just by rubbing the sandalwood across the stone. So he takes the phrase and brings the sweetness of the phrase and the fragrance and the aroma and the, you know, the deeper significance of the phrase. So he takes this Gata Vyalika phrase and really works it. Free from pretensions, those who are transcendental to all pretensions, those who are above all pretensions. So, what does that mean? There are several things that it means. I'm going to focus on that phrase because it appears in the first line of the next purport also. Pretension. It's to pretend. To pretend to be something that you're not. So there's pretending or deception of others, and there's self-deception also. Where, so it's called duplicity. You say one thing, and you do another thing. And sometimes it can be deliberate. You say something to somebody because you want them to accept or believe or do a certain something when your intention is something else altogether. Cheating, deception, pretension. So those that are, is one of the defects of the conditioned souls. So becoming free from pretension, gatavyalika, requires even more subtle self-deception must be passed over or transcended. Because we can even delude ourselves into thinking, you know, something's okay when, you know, deeper inside we know darn well it's not okay, but we make some rationalization to say it's okay. Goes on. So, no pretension can also mean, Prabhupada quotes Jiva Goswami in his commentary on this verse, says that this resonates with or connects with Dharma Projita Kaitavotra from the introduction verses of the Bhagavatam, second verse of the Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Kaitavotra Paramo Nirmatsaranam Sitam. So, the Bhagavatam is speaking about Paradharma, and conversely, it will not speak about Kaitava Dharma. Kaitava Dharma is, according to Jiva Goswami, is pretentious Dharma. That which doesn't give the real thing, but it gives you something. And you think that something is the real thing. So that Kaitava Dharma, or cheating religiosity, it cuts into the real spirit of the living entity, or the potential of the soul to become God realized. It takes it away. When one is thinking, I'm getting the real thing. And such Kaitava Dharmas as, and he goes through the list, you know, Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and the process of yoga. What is Bhukti, Mukti, Siddhi, Kami, Sakale, Ashanti, paraphrases that and expresses the whole thing. So if one, similar to the prior chapter, one may worship this deva or that devi and get something, but when you do that worship and get that something, but don't take shelter of the personality of God, and you've been cheated. And such religion is a cheating religion. It's, so one who's beyond such pretension, beyond all pretension, has no other shelter but the personality of God. It is this exclusive, pure devotional service. No other shelter. And no other expectation also. Other than simply a loving relationship. If you enter into a relationship, a loving relationship, and you say, well, let's have this loving relationship where you supply me this and I supply you that, okay? What's that? Business. It's not a loving relationship, it's a contract. It's a business entrepreneurial thing. And when you stop delivering, it's over. And when I stop delivering for you, it's over. Because you broke the contract. Take you to court. You broke the contract. So one who's above or beyond all pretensions, all, then another notion is what. That comes when there's misconceptions. And guess what? We all have misconceptions. We have misconceptions because it's like the default mode. If we don't have a clear conception, proper conception of Krishna, we're going to have some misconceptions. And everybody in the material world has misconceptions. What is supreme? You know, it's a long list. The people think, what is supreme? Love is God, I'm God, you're God, somebody else is God. And even, you know, even thinking what Krishna is God, you know, there's misconceptions of what that means. He's my order supplier. Through him I can merge with one. So so many varieties. So when there's proper guidance through Shukadeva Goswami-like personalities, we get the proper conception, the proper mood, the proper realization, the activity of devotional service, and we get lifted up. So Shukadeva Goswami is saying, such personalities as Brahma, Shiva, and all those who are beyond pretension, he specifically is referring to Brahma and Shiva according to the commentary here, that these two, along with two others, are heads of sampradayas. Brahma sampradaya, Rudra sampradaya, Kumara sampradaya. Such persons are beyond pretension. That means they are delivering because they're living within that realm of unmixed devotion. And for such persons, they worship you. Being so revered with awe and veneration, may that Supreme Absolute be pleased with me. So that's just a warm-up for the morning class so that you can see where we are. Text 20 from chapter 4 is one of these alliteration verses. Shriyapatir, Yajyapatir, Prajapatir, Dhyampatir, Lokapatir, Dharapatir. Patir gatis, Chandraka Vrishni Sattvatam, Prasivtam, Me Bhagavan Satam Patihi. If you don't know what it means, you can understand it's very poetic. But to speak of very deep. Nay, Lord Sri Krishna, who is the worshipable Lord of all devotees, the protector and glory of all the kings, like Andhaka and Vrishni of the Yadu dynasty, the husband of all goddesses of fortune, the director of all sacrifices, and therefore the leader of all living entities, the controller of all intelligence, the proprietor of all planets, spiritual and material, and the supreme incarnation on earth, please be merciful upon me. So Prabhupada begins the purport by saying, since Shukadeva Goswami is one of the prominent Gatavyalikas, free from pretension, he's indicating out of his humility, others who have that qualification. So now Prabhupada is, Shukadeva Goswami also has that qualification. There's no pretension. There's no say one thing, do something else. There's no other shelter. There's no other desire. There's no other message. There's no bait and switch. He's just delivering pure devotional service with every phrase he speaks. Since Shukadeva Goswami is one of the prominent Gatavyalikas who are freed from all misconceptions, he therefore expresses his own realized perception of Lord Sri Krishna as being the sum total of all perfection. Personality of Godhead. There was a phrase that was again coming as a refrain, achieving perfection of life, attaining perfection, achieving perfection. So perfection is Krishna. He is perfection. Attaining perfection is attaining Krishna. And to attain Krishna, it's not, you know, this hedging business that goes on in the world. It's not appropriate. It doesn't work. It's put all your eggs in one basket. Everything goes to Krishna. Everything. So, this verse is, he is everything. He's Shreyapatir, Yajyapatir, Prajapatir. He's got a long list. He's everything. Dhyapatir, Lokapatir, Dharapatir. He's it. He's numero uno. I'll read a little bit. Everyone is seeking the favor of the goddess of fortune. But people do not know that Lord Sri Krishna is the beloved husband of all goddesses of fortune. In Brahma Samhita, it is said that the Lord, in his transcendental abode, Goloka Vrindavan, is accustomed to herding Surabhi cows and is served there by hundreds of thousands of goddesses of fortune. All these goddesses of fortune are manifestations of his pleasure potency, Hladini Shakti, in his internal energy. And when the Lord manifests himself on this earth, he partially displayed the activities of his pleasure potency in his Rasa Leela, just to attract the conditioned souls who are all after the phantasmagoria, pleasure potency, Maya, the reflection of the internal potency, integrated sex enjoyment. So, again, here's some indication that if one doesn't understand the transcendental nature of Krishna, then one sees rasa dance, one thinks, oh, that's what Krishna is about. He's just a better enjoyer at sex activity than we are. But there's no mention, Prabhupada says over and over, there's no mention of any sex activity. He's enjoying with his own internal potency, his pleasure potency. So persons who are mad after this sex enjoyment principle, they're deluded from they're prevented by that from understanding Krishna. So it's the strongest deterrent from proper understanding. So go back up, and persons are mad after the favor of the goddess of fortune. Krishna is the husband of the goddess of fortune. He's the shelter for millions of goddesses of fortune who they're fully in his service and under his control. And great personalities like Shukadeva Goswami, who has no interest in mundane pleasures of any kind, including mundane sex life, is appreciating the attraction of the goddess of fortune for Krishna. And he's narrating the Rasa Leela. There's no mundane affair, is the point. Otherwise, Shukadeva Goswami would just be leaving it with no interest or with disgust. Same Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was so strict as a sannyasi. Prabhupada mentions here that females could not even approach Lord Chaitanya to offer obeisances, or he would not hear them singing in the Jagannath temple, just because he was so strict as a sannyasi. And yet, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would glorify the love of the gopis for Krishna. Because there's no trace of anything material in that exchange. Because it's of the spiritual world. Making a sharp contrast between the spiritual and material activities. Now this is important, very important, because the topic that Shukadeva Goswami has been asked to speak about is the process of creation. The material energy. So the point is this, when the Lord deals with the material energy, don't think of it, you know, like us trying to control the material energy. Because it's not. It's His energy, and just by His willing, the material energy moves. That's not like us. If we want the material energy to move, we got to exert ourselves, and it may or may not move. That point is made earlier in this discussion, by the way. He makes no effort at all, and everything happens. Contrastingly, the living entity may make all kinds of efforts, and without the sanction of Him, nothing happens. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto Him. It's a long purport, so I'll just cover some highlights. As far as Krishna being Yajñapati, he follows a very interesting line of presentation. He says in the Vedic yajñas, there are sacrificial performances where there's certain things recommended, different types of sacrifice are performed that will help one achieve benefit in one's life. But the benefits that one can achieve in one's life as a result of sacrifices are but favors from the goddess of fortune. And once again, the goddess of fortune is in the service of Krishna. her shelter is Krishna. So, factually, he is therefore the Lord of all sacrifices. He is the final enjoyer of all kinds of yajñas, bhoktaram yajñatapasam. Therefore, Yajñapati is another name of Lord Vishnu. It is recommended in the Bhagavad Gita that everything be done for Yajñapati, yajñartat karmana. You know this verse from chapter 3. Yajñartat karmano yatra lokayam karma bandhana. For otherwise, one's act will be the cause of conditioning by the laws of material nature. Exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. If you don't do acts of sacrifice, you'll be bound by your activity. And you can't stop activity because your spirit soul and spirit souls are active. You have to do something. Therefore, work should be performed as a sacrifice to Vishnu. Otherwise, work is binding. Then he brings in this Gatavyalika once again. He says, those that are not free from all misconceptions, Vyalikam, perform sacrifices to please the minor demigods. So you see the distinction that he's making where Gatavyalika means exclusive surrender. Like Rupa Goswami says it this way in Nectar Devotion. He says that love is exclusive. Not so many, but one. Shelter is exclusive. Because love is exclusive, and Krishna is the supreme source of everything, it's all inclusive. You develop love for Krishna, then you develop love for all things. It's all inclusive because of being exclusive. So, Gatavyalika means whatever it is that is going on with your life, consciousness, activity, repose it with Krishna. Take shelter of Krishna. Don't so much for Krishna, so much somewhere else, or independent, or everything goes to Krishna. And one who lives like that, then they're doing their work in a proper way. Yajñartat karmano nyatra lokayam karma bandhana. So that's Gatavyalika. There's no misconception and there's no other shelter. No hedging, no pretense, no deception. And such persons will have that experience. They'll realize the shelter that Krishna affords. Then Prajapati, he refers to Eko Bahunam Yo Vididati Kaman, the Upanishad verse, where he's what does the father do for the children? He provides for the children. Krishna is providing for everyone. Eko Bahunam Yo Vididati Kaman. One is supplying the necessities of everyone. He's Prajapati. Everyone comes from him. He's Prajapati. Krishna declares this in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Everything comes from him. All the seven great sages, and before them the four great sages, and all others, the Manus, the forefathers of mankind, and from them all the descendants, everything and everyone comes into being from him, from Krishna. Those that know that factually, they engage in my devotional service. Because he's the Prajapati of Prajapatis. Therefore, he's the supreme Bhuta Brit, or maintainer of all living entities. Dhyanpati. Living beings are proportionately endowed with intelligence in terms of their previous activity. So Krishna is reciprocating with their previous lokoyam karma bandhana, or on the other side, they're offering their activities unto him. When they offer their activities unto him, they're given proportionate intelligence to understand how to come to him. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita also. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam tadami buddhiyogam tam. So he gives the intelligence how to come to him to those who take up this direction of engaging in activities in relation to Krishna. So he's dhyampati. Whatever intelligence, even the intelligence of the thief or the criminal or the crooked person, where do they get their intelligence? Krishna. Where do they get their power? Where does Rani Kashipu get his power? From Krishna. From the same source that prevents Rani Kashipu to harm Prahlad. From Krishna, from the Supreme. So Dhyambati, he's the intelligence. He's the giver of all intelligence, the shelter of all intelligence. And so he goes through the purport, each of these glorifications of the Supreme Lord. What's the message? We're not independent. We're dependent. You know, in this world, that's uncomfortable for people. They don't want to be dependent. They want to declare their independence and act independently. And being dependent, fundamentally, constitutionally, what to speak of, willfully? Oh, that's bad. The spirit is, it's bad. But that's a great misfortune, because it's actually the supreme good. And those who are gata vilika understand it. The other is a pretending. You know, it's another word the Prabhupada uses is bluffing. I remember as a college student, there was a group of people that I thought, but my opinion changed. I thought they were really together people. So there was a circumstance that came, and I asked them, how's it going? And they said, everything's under control. Just like that. And I thought, forget these people. What do you mean, everything's under control? Ha! Bluff. Everything's under control. Including yourself. And whatever ability you have to control is under control by somebody else, not you. I mean, I didn't understand Krishna consciousness so well, but I knew this is just total nonsense. Just, you're on top of the world. Everything's under control. That's the opposite of Gatya Velika. And such persons who are, it's a demoniac spirit. So much is under my control, and so much more I will have under control very soon. I've got my plan. I'm perfect, powerful, and happy, and controlling and enjoying as much as I can get my grubby hands on. That's terrible. So devotees don't succumb to that kind of foolishness, neither in their interpersonal actions nor their own life. It's not a sign of weakness, it's a sign of intelligence. We are fully dependent upon Krishna. I'll read the concluding paragraph. All these qualifications, as the different types of pati mentioned in this verse, are meant for Lord Sri Krishna. And Shukadeva Swami has therefore especially mentioned pati and gati of the Yadu dynasty. The members of the Yadu dynasty knew that Lord Krishna is everything, and all of them intended to return to Lord Krishna after he had finished his transcendental pastimes on earth. Yadu dynasty was annihilated by the will of the Supreme Lord because its members had to return home with the Lord. The annihilation of the Yadu dynasty was a material show created by the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, the Lord and the members of the Yadu dynasty are all eternal associates. The Lord is therefore the guide of all devotees, and as such, Yukadeva Goswami offered him due respects with love-laden feelings. So, a long morning class. Sorry to detain you so long. Any thoughts or questions you'd like to bring up?
Thinking that yes, I've heard it, I know it, I heard about it. So how does one get, what does one think, and how does one get over it?
What is the it that you're speaking about? The pretension?
No, like you know, the devotees enjoy the pastime listening again and again.
Yes.
But when I heard about this pastime, there's nothing new in it. So.
Well. How many times do you hear the holy name? 25,000 times every day. I've heard it. What's next? So, the same thing that we're hearing, we're not receiving the fullness of that. We have to go more deeply into the holy name, or hearing the pastimes, or hearing the teachings. By deepening our submission, by all of the things, becoming more pure in heart, hearing with greater attention. Am I touching on the question that you're asking? I'm not sure I understood your question, by the way. It's not just information. It's a transcendental experience to hear the pastimes of Krishna or to hear the holy name of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya, in his association with Gadadhar Pandit, who would recite Srimad Bhagavatam, he would hear whole passages specifically mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He would hear about Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, and Shukadeva Goswami, Gadadhar Pandit would describe it in detail, and Lord Chaitanya's response was, say it again, say it again. Why? Why wasn't he saying, oh, I've heard that, some other passage, please? Say it again. And that's Lord Chaitanya. Because the nectar of the message of the topics of Krishna, the topics of the personality of Godhead, are unlimited, unfathomable, as deep as the ocean. So go for a dive and come back up for some air and go dive again. And so the enjoyment for those that have heard it already and want to hear it again is the rasa, the exchange of loving mellows with Krishna through the medium of the topic. Not just information. We're information specialists, but not tasting loving exchanges with Krishna specialists. We just have to, you know, change the channel or reorient ourselves to what spiritual life really is. And gradually that happens. Something else? Yeah?
Since in this verse, besides invoking the Supreme Lord, isn't he really stressing the importance of the parampara system also?
Can you explain?
Can I explain?
Yeah. Can you elaborate on your question or your thought on this?
Because, you know, he was talking about the sampradaya, the four sampradayas, and...
Well, he was speaking about... Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma and others who are free from pretension. So yes, he's speaking about those who are so qualified. You know, the principle of disciplic succession is not exactly on topic, but the on topic is persons who have such qualification that they're beyond pretension. Like, you know, all of us assembled here, we're receiving knowledge in disciplic succession. That we can say. But we can't equally say that we're all beyond pretension. So, is the receiving knowledge in disciplic succession certainly is required. And more. And the and more is where this emphasis is going. Those who have attained the stage of being completely beyond pretension, those are the persons who truly worship you, my dear Lord Krishna, and realize you. That's the emphasis here. What's your point? No. Someone else? Yes?
You mentioned about independent mindedness. How to overcome this kind of independent mind?
Well,
we are conditioned from our childhood.
That's just childhood, before we even got here. The spirit of independence is what brings us here. And that spirit of independence is what keeps us here. So, how to overcome... was the antidote for independent-mindedness. Association and proper knowledge and practice. I mean, just being observant. Am I independent? I mean, even my ability to think that I'm independent is not independent. My ability to try to act independently is not independent. The thinking power can be taken away. My acting power can be taken away. What independence is that? Or, you know, if I'm independent, then why do I have to suffer? Why do I have to get old, and why do I have to get diseased, and why do I have to die, and if I'm independent? So a little thoughtfulness can at least chip away, but, you know, the spirit of independence, you know, somehow doesn't want to let go. So association with those that are thinking differently than independent, and hearing from the scriptures, and particularly in the association of those who are thinking differently than independent, observing, reflecting, so that we can have observing and reflecting so that we can have a more realistic conception than Yeah, but still, the spirit is very strong.
My problem is basically, you know, when you're facing problems in life, you could approach seniors or people who are ready to help you. But still, the tendency is, let me try to do this first. Kind of.
That's just one manifestation. I'm sure there's a bunch of others. If that one's there, there's a bunch of others. Conditioning is very strong. So, you know, it's not just one thing, it's the whole package. So, you know, which is more likely to be successful? Multiple people with wisdom or my, you know, one little person? Yes, it's obvious. But, you know, so it's quite unreasonable on many platforms, like Prabhupada's example, one stick, very easy to break, bundle up a number of sticks, very difficult to break. I'd rather be the one stick. So I can be broken. It's not rational. So to look at, you know, that situation with our rational faculty is one way to help at least weaken that irrational act of wanting to be independent. That is not conclusive.
Logically, I understand all
that. Yeah, logically, still the spirit is there. Okay, so, the rule goes something like this. Krishna supplies us with resources so that we can overcome our material conditioning. But if we stubbornly hold on to our material conditioning, Krishna has other methods. You know, the sledgehammer. So when we get smashed, then maybe we'll understand. Maybe not also. But, you know, that's an option. We can choose to submit ourselves in a mood of dependence upon Krishna and his devotees, or we can choose not to. And if we choose not to, but there is some sincerity, then Krishna can, you know, let us learn the hard way. And even with that, there's no guarantee. Because ultimately it depends upon submission. But, you know, to help us our submission along, Krishna can sit. I've seen that happen. And I've seen people get the message. I've seen it happen, people don't get the message. What I'm saying here is the bottom line is Krishna is there helping, but he doesn't interfere with our free will. We can hold on to this false sense of independence as long as we like. He'll help us to get over that. Best is by hearing. So like in the nectar of instruction, understand simply by hearing. I hear, but I don't understand. So then I see in others their suffering. Then I understand. Or third class, hear, see, still don't understand, and have to suffer. Oh, now I understand. But fourth class is, even after that, I don't understand. I hear, I see, I experience suffering, and I don't understand. That's just stubborn. I choose to not understand. I choose to understand. So I want my independence. So, in your case, it doesn't sound like, you know, I want to hold on to my independence at any cost. So, you know, one of those other options here, see, get smashed. best to hear. And so hear with great attention so that it goes deepest possible and progressively deeper and deeper. And then those things that you've heard and understood, you apply. And that also helps a lot, like mega. Apply the things that you've understood. That's submission. And it's like withdrawing your independence. At least experimentally, let me try this. As far as possible, try to apply consistently things that you've understood that are very important. That will help in this independence spirit problem. Something else? Yeah?
Self-realization and God-realization. See, I feel the self-realization, the impurity removal and sense control is a bit humongous, whereas devotional service is simple, and just by devotional service, and that it will self-realization is possible, but along with the devotional service, there should be an endeavor to identify the impurities, or just they will go by themselves.
What do you think?
I'm not ignorant.
What's your answer to your question? What was your understanding on this? You're not sure.
I'm accepting
that. No, the question that you asked is it necessary to identify the impurities, or will they just go up by themselves?
Yes.
So the answer is, Scripture provides us with that understanding, so that's an indication we're meant to understand what they are. And while we can't, on our own endeavor, make something happen or make something stop, still we make some endeavor according to the instructions that we receive, and Krishna's sanction makes it happen. So we should know and we should endeavor, but not thinking solo our endeavor is going to make it happen. Because our endeavor should be in the mood of serving Krishna in order that I can come before Krishna and he'll smile because I'm fit to come before Krishna. So for that to happen, for Krishna's pleasure, let me overcome this. I'd like to become a better instrument of service for Krishna. For service reasons, let me overcome this obstacle. But I can't do it on my own. It's not meant to happen on one's own. It's meant to happen by Krishna smiling and empowering that effort. Okay. Something else? Anyone? Okay. Yeah.
As Bhagavatam Gita clearly speaks of Lord Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why is it that even after so many years and different parts of the world, people are worshipping one God, means they believe in one God, in the other part of the area, people believe in other God, that they worship other gods, some various nation puja, and hundreds of lakhs of people are worshipping those God, and they are not clear about that Krishna, Lord Krishna being the Supreme Godhead personality.
There's a lot of different ways that can be responded to. One of them is that there's diversity of faith because there's the modes of nature. because there's the modes of nature, there's faith in goodness, faith in passion, faith in ignorance, and then subdivisions of those. Faith is there. There's one chapter in Bhagavad Gita called Divisions of Faith, where Arjuna asks Krishna the question, if persons don't have faith in you, do they have faith in something else? The answer is yes, according to the modes of nature. But it's not that the modes of nature is the culprit. It's our taking shelter of other than Krishna, and we just have, you know, a whole big array of options, starting with principally the three modes of nature, then subdivisions of those. So persons who choose to not place their faith in Krishna, they don't go out of existence. The soul has the quality of faith, but reposed elsewhere, then it manifests according to where it's reposed. All things come from Krishna, including different types of faith. It's like passing a light through a lens. And the lens can be of different colors. So on the other side it can be, it's a white light, but on the other side of the lens it's green or blue or yellow or red or whatever the lens is. Pass through the light, comes out, the light passing through that lens comes out differently. So the modes of nature manifest faith in different ways. So go the other way, having understood that what's needed is to release the souls who have faith in something other than Krishna from the influence of the modes of nature, or at least to elevate them progressively toward the mode of goodness, because then there's a clearer picture of the supreme cause of all causes. But in the lower modes of nature, this, it's not going to happen, understanding the cause of all causes. They'll understand something else. My hard endeavor is producing results. That's my faith. And so many other things. Worship of this, worship of that. Okay. You have another? Kaitava? Kaitava means... Prabhupada is translated as cheating. And that the terms are contradictory. Cheating religion. The cheating is that the soul is cheated from its fullness. Because Dharma is meant to bring us to our state of fullness. So that which is accepted as Dharma but doesn't take us to a position of fullness, we're being cheated by that. Although maybe some benefits are coming. I didn't get cheated, I got what I wanted. I wanted some wealth and I got wealth. I wanted some fame and I got fame. I wanted a son, I got a son. I wanted my job, I got my job. But one is cheated from the real attainment the soul can potentially reach. Kaitava Dharma. It's from an absolute perspective. When reading the Bhagavatam, it's most helpful to bear in mind Bhagavatam is speaking from the absolute perspective. Like the statements, simply useless labor. Shrama eva hi kevalam, just wasting your time. You're just wasting your time. Now, some people will be hurt by that or insulted. How can you say I'm wasting my time? I'm doing all these good things. Waste of time. Now, why are you so arrogant? Waste of time. From an absolute perspective, the connection with the goal of life is not being reached. So while there's some little sandcastle being built, the tide is going to come in and wash away the sandcastle. Time will come and take all that good something away. So building a sandcastle on the beach is a waste of time from an absolute perspective. It's not establishing anything permanent. And what in this world is permanent? Not just a sandcastle at the beach, but one, you know, one's empire somewhere away from the beach. It's all temporary. The whole show is temporary. What's eternal? So one's attention should go to that which is permanent, not reconstructing the impermanent, thinking now I'll make a place of permanent happiness in this impermanent place. That is kind of a dharma, because the soul has the potential for permanent happiness, unlimited. Okay, thank you very much. Oh, a little bit, something? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada Maharaj ki jai.